I'm Leanne Tran, psychologist who's worked with families whose kids don't fit the mold for almost 20 years. I've worked with children for decades, but I know parents are the real change makers when it comes to their kids. Having three kids of my own means I know it's not easy. Parent Like a Psychologist is all about simplifying how you support your kids with psychology information filtered through years of experience to take you from overwhelmed to confident. Come on in. So welcome, Sharon, to Parent Like a Psychologist. Listeners, for you, I guess I've got Sharon Collin with me today, who I'm really excited to have on the podcast because I think you do some amazing work with families about ADHD. And I'll let you talk a little bit more about what you do in a second, but welcome. I should let you say hello to start
Thank
with.
Thank you. Hello.
So we met through a business kind of coaching group. And you probably don't know this, Sharon, but you came recommended to me before I even met you. So there were lots of people in the group who were saying, oh, you should meet Sharon. You should meet Sharon. She does amazing stuff with families. So I thought that'd be a nice way to start
Oh, that's really lovely.
Yeah. So you are from the functional family. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you came to be doing what you're doing now?
Yes. So I'm an ADHD coach and consultant. I've been in this space for a long time. I basically am trained to help people with ADHD with their executive function struggles that come along with ADHD. And on a personal note, I became an ADHD coach because I have three beautiful boys with ADHD and my husband also. And listening to my husband's story of growing up with ADHD, it was quite traumatic, and to say the least. And he had a really rough time. And when my first son was diagnosed, I can remember looking at my gorgeous little boy who had obviously had some challenges and thinking, oh, I can't have that be his story. I cannot have him have the same story as his dad. And I just started researching like a woman possessed everything I could about ADHD back in those early days. And my poor family, I put them through all these weird experiments and documented everything and did all this research and then went and formally trained at ADHD New York to get that qualification. And then once I started working out what was working for my family and what was working for and with the ADHD brain rather than against it, I started sharing it with other people, and I created the functional family very much to support other families going through this similar journey. Because I don't know about you guys, but when my son got diagnosed, we got a photocopied pamphlet. Out going, what the hell am I going to do with this pamphlet? Like, it had nothing about how I was going to raise a functional adult. And I almost called the business the dysfunctional family. But I really wanted to focus on giving our kids the skills to be able to work with their strengths with ADHD and work, you know, and for families to be able to enjoy their time together rather than just battle every day, which is what we were doing definitely in the early days.
Yeah, I think that's such a common story. There's a few things in there that I hear all the time, and one is definitely that piece of paper from the diagnosis appointment. Sometimes parents come to me too and they say, yeah, they said my child has ADHD, but I don't really understand what that is or what I'm meant to do. So sometimes they feel even like more lost when they don't get a piece of paper. But also, I'm interested to hear more about like the difference between what your husband experienced and your son's now, because that's another common thing I hear when I'm working with children, that their parents will say, I was like that at school. It's just that nobody knew and nobody could help. And so what do you think the differences are between back then and now? Do you think things have changed?
So, well, things are changing. They still need to change more, but we are moving in the right direction. Okay. So when Anthony went through school, like we're talking late 80s, early 90s, right? The ADHD was a naughty boy that needed some discipline, right? And he has a really hyperactive presentation. He's got combined type, but he shows he's very, very hyperactive. So he got bullied in school. He used to fight all the time. He was quite aggressive. He got banned from the classroom altogether.
Right.
And
Yeah.
luckily, and what saved him, I think, is he used to do odd jobs around the school because he was so disruptive that they used to send him to do odd jobs. So you walk around the school that he went to, and he goes, and we used to live opposite it, quite probably quite traumatic for him to live opposite the school now thinking about it. But he used to walk around going, planted those trees, cemented in that letterbox, dug that thing. Like, they used to just get him to do jobs with his hands, which I think is actually quite amazing. And the principal saw something in Anthony, saw that he could do things with his hands. Like, he was that kind of kid that would learn by while doing things. And used to talk to him about what was going on in the classroom, like the syllabus, while he was working, essentially. So he had people that did believe in him and did honor the way that his brain operated, but not without stigma and being told that he was going to amount to nothing. And it was a lot. And luckily, he had a beautiful, supportive family that really believed in him. And I have no doubt that that helped him today, but it is a traumatic one. Like, he never got invited to a birthday party. He was very much socially isolated because of his ADHD. And so now, when I look at my sons, I think the world is changing. Now we know a bit more about ADHD. The stigma of it is kind of gone a little bit more. Now it does show its head from time to time, like, that child needs some discipline, and like that from the old guy in the supermarket, or that children didn't talk like that in my day, and we didn't even have ADHD in my day. Oh, well, we did. You just guys you handled it terribly. So yeah, so you can see I can go on all sorts of rants about this stuff, but what we are now doing is about actually making accommodations for the children and making accommodations for adults, honoring what's going on for them. Like, asking, I wonder what's going on for them at the moment. Are they sensorily overwhelmed? Are they dysregulated? What can we do to support them instead of just trying to force them to do a th to be like a neurotypical person? That's not how they're going to be. And all that does when we force is it just causes trauma for that individual.
Yeah, that's right. And prevents them from learning the things they have the potential to learn.
It's that old thing of, like, if we tell a child with ADHD to sit still in a classroom, so we say, sit still, you can't move. And then they have to concentrate on sitting still. And so all their energy goes to not moving. And they're sitting there with that. They're now not hearing anything more that you have to say in that lesson. Like, they can't concentrate on that as well. So they're now just concentrating on being stressed. So we're actually doing them a disservice because we're actually now asking them to only concentrate on sitting still, and they're not being able to absorb what you need them to do in the class. So it's those kind of accommodations, and really they're not much, but gosh, they can make a big difference for individuals. And having that strength-based approach, what is good at, what strengths, what ones of your strengths can we use to help you solve this challenge? That's where coaching comes in, and that's what I love to do. I like to empower people to use what their brain's good at and what strengths come easily to them.
So that's interesting to hear more about as well, because I guess I know what I do as a psychologist helping children and their families, but what is the role of a coach for? So you work with parents of kids with ADHD, but kind of for the whole family, right? So what is the role of a coach?
So the difference between a psychologist and a coach, and really the dream team is to have both on your team. That's what I would very much say, is that because coaches aren't therapists, they're not trained in trauma, in emotional, in handling emotional issues. What we are trained in is practical life skill stuff. So you would have a coach to help you, like, to voice your concerns. I mean, a psychologist to help you voice your concerns and handle the trauma that comes along with ADHD. And mind you, some psychologists are really great with the practical life skill stuff too. But a coach is about, okay, we have this friction point of getting out the door in the morning. I cry in the car every time I drop my kids to school because they have put me through the ringer. How can I get out the door? How can I establish habits? How can I, and I don't love the word habits, but I'm going to go habits or patterns. How can I give my kids the skills to be able to eat their breakfast and, you know, and do all the little points of friction that come up through the day. That's what a coach is trained to do. So we're very much about practical skills. And so I find that with psychologists and coaches, we refer to each other all the time. And, you know, a lot of pediatricians and psychiatrists also refer to psychologists and coaches. So it just depends on what the client is going through at that time, what skills they need to develop. And there is a little bit of crossover, but what I do definitely isn't therapy. I'm not trained in that. It is about, you know, really equipping the client with those strategies to try to see what works for them. So what we do is we go through a bit of a process of looking where friction points are in the day, where the friction is coming up for the individual. So if I'm working with an adult or working with a family, looking at how we can do some capacity building. What are we going to do to give them some energy back so they don't get to the end of the day and they're like, no one talked to me because I just had such a rough day. What can we do? What strategies can, and we've got like these incredible resources of strategies, but what we're listening out for is certain markers that the family are saying, so we can make sure that we collaborate with the family to hit the right strategy for that family. Then we get them to go away and try it, and we get them to give us feedback on it, and we refine it. So they might come back and go like, I love that strategy, or they might go, this part of it didn't work. So what we do is then we tweak it and we refine it as that check-in relationship to be able to equip them. What how I kind of picture it is giving them tools in their tool belt, which they carry around with them. And so when friction comes up or when a challenge comes up, they've got that confidence of going, okay, I've got something to throw at it. And different tools for different times and ages and stages. But they've got that inner confidence because a lot of parents, they read so much about ADHD. I know I certainly did. I read so much, but when it's their own child and nothing triggers you like your own child, when something's really intense in front of you, you just freeze and you're trying to recall the right strategy to bring out. But because you've got so much, you just need that really clear pathway. So I love to cut through that and go, okay, let's work together. Let's find something that we can throw at this time. And it gives parents that confidence, that kind of like, okay, once you have that confidence, if you relax a little bit into it, you can request accommodations, you can advocate better for your needs and your family's needs. And it's an empowering experience. It's not draining, it's fun. We get to try things.
Excellent. It sounds fantastic. So really responsive to individual circumstances, but also based on all of that knowledge you have about ADHD and the things that will work.
And I do want to say, when you're looking at ADHD coaching, there's an ADHD coach website where all the trained ADHD coaches are. It's called ADHD Coaches Australasia. And anyone can call themselves a coach, right? So it's an unregulated industry. We've got to be really careful about this. But you have to be on that website to be a credentialed coach. You need to have done ADHD specific training. The best coach training in the world is from ADCA in New York. And then you need to be registered and accredited with the ICF, so International Coaching Federation. That is our body that we report to. If your coach doesn't have those things, then it's not, you know, you're not a credentialed coach. You know, like if you haven't made, they may not have done the right training. So just be really careful to ask for those things, because we really want to stress that, you know, we want to make sure having ADHD yourself and yourself is not enough to be able to support other families. We want to have done the coach training. And then if you're working with families, we want to have done that next model up, which is the families training as well. So yeah, I just want to highlight that because sometimes people go, oh, like, that's an unregulated industry. No, every coach that I know actually goes above and beyond for their clients. Like they have you know, incredible resources. And I know the training personally, it's phenomenal. And it takes years. And, you know, it's not something that you can just decide one day that you're going to do it based on what your family's experiences are.
I think that is a really important distinction to make because I think the way I see it anyway is like when I'm working with parents, there's lots of parenting strategies out there, but sometimes, or probably most of the time, they don't work so well when kids have ADHD. And so much like there's probably general coaching out there, what I would really advocate parents to be looking for is that knowledge about ADHD and the brain differences, so that, you know, there's no use suggesting things that aren't going to work. So you really want to look for somebody who has a good knowledge of the science behind everything.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, for a lot of parents, we know ADHD is largely genetic, right? So a lot of the parents also have ADHD. Yeah. And we don't want to cause these families any more stress and overwhelm than what they are already going through.
Yeah.
And, you know, the parenting strategies can cause that if they're not designed to work with the neurodiverse brain. And so I just think that, you know, it's very important that we look after these families and honour them, because asking a parent to regulate, it can be so overwhelming for a parent that has ADHD that hasn't got the skills to regulate, asking them to help regulate their child at that point. You know, or asking someone to read the room, but they haven't been taught social skills on how to read the room. Like that's just causing more trauma. So we need to be really careful about that. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And that kind of leads into one of the questions I wanted to ask you today, which was about the impact of ADHD on families, but then also about that extra difficulty of parenting a child with ADHD when a parent themselves has ADHD. But if we start with the impact on families to begin with, what you've worked with lots of families, because I can see lots of hearts on your wall there that represent each family's support. What would you say are the biggest impacts of ADHD on a family?
Just so many. Like, people tend to think of ADHD like a focus issue. It's a focus issue at school, right? That's when you're outside of this world, you think that. But what executive function challenges do is they have a way of working into every single area of your life. So it is, you know, time awareness, task prioritization. Think about how much those executive functions come into your just even getting out of your house in the morning. Emotional regulation. If you've got a whole family that can't regulate and don't have tools to help and assist with dysregulation, like, that can be really tricky. Everyone's yelling, everyone's screaming, everyone's crying. Lots of holes getting punched in the wall. That's what my family likes, you know, has had times of. And then we've got things like memory recall. Like, you know, a lot of the time it falls on the primary caregiver who is controlling all the school notes. I counted at the start of term one, I had 47 school notes from all different schools and all different things. Like, that's too many, right? I won't rant. Oh, that's a different podcast. we have to wear an orange shirt. And now it's green shirt day. Now it's pajama day. And, you know, thinking about this, when you have ADHD in the family, all the sequencing that goes on with just maintaining a life, not to mention work, sleep, keeping everyone fed, it infiltrates to every area. It can be particularly challenging when that primary caregiver also has ADHD, because sometimes, you know, that, you know, keeping afloat and not burning out, we start to see these boom or bust patterns. So we go okay for a little while, then we bust, we burn out.
Right.
And we go okay for a little while and then we burn out. And the parents who are carrying this incredible load of just all these appointments and also all the expense, because we know ADHD alone does not attract NDIS funding, although I really wish it would. You know, we've got extra expense, we've got extra appointments, we've got extra time, and then add on executive function struggles. And no wonder we see, you know, this is trigger warning for anyone, we see higher divorce rates, we see higher suicide rates, we see, you know, higher levels of depression, we see burnout, we see all of these things that are going on. And as someone who lives this every day personally, you know, this is why we created the functional family, because we really wanted a place where individuals can be seen, understood, and supported. And we cut we cut through some of it with practical tools, because that was the bit that we felt that we were lacking. We felt alone, we felt isolated, we felt like everywhere we turned there was brick walls all the time. And I just didn't want that to be a journey for another family to go through.
Yeah, yep. It's a little overwhelming, isn't it, to hear that it kind of affects all areas. But that does make sense, given that you're talking a lot about executive functioning, which is, I describe to parents as the ability to do something that's executing a function, really. Think about how many things we have to do in the day. They all require that ability, so it can reach all of those areas. But also then, you know, and research shows that like parenting kids with ADHD is the most stressful experience in terms of parenting. So I think it's worth acknowledging that for parents as well, that it is incredibly difficult. It's not anything that they're doing wrong or aren't capable of. It's just incredibly difficult.
It's hard. And yeah. I never, ever want to portray my family as like some Instagram, you know, like the sun's behind us. We're all just walking along the beach happily. Like that is not how it goes down, right? Like, you know, it is loud and chaotic and it's great fun. But the only difference between before, when I wasn't coping, and I really wasn't, I used to spend a lot of time hiding on the floor of the kitchen crying, and when I am coping, is that I have strategies to help.
Yeah.
So I have confidence that whatever gets thrown at me, you know, literally as well, I can cope with it, right? So yeah. We have tools, and we come together as a family with our strengths. Like we know that we laugh a lot. We know that there's going to be rough times, but we come together as a family because we've got each other's backs. And that's not to say that we don't have challenges. Like I have chronic health issues. I have psoriatic arthritis, which is a real bugger. And, you know, that we have some Tourette's, we have some ODD, we have some sensory processing issues and ADHD. And we're gonna love each other with all those things, and we're gonna create a happy family life with all those things. Now we're not gonna be happy all the time, and it probably isn't gonna look great at the supermarket or from the outside. But it feels good to be in it, and that's all I care about. If we can feel good to be around each other, that's all I care about.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think is that why you called it the functional family as well, because it links to that executive functioning. So it's kind of, which is all that's the support and the strategies that you provide a lot of.
We want to build executive function skills. That to me, like I very much view those like a muscle. The more we practice it, the more we can build skills around those. And it's one thing to say, oh, you know, ADHD has its challenges. It does. It does have challenges. And I've got a lovely friend who is a beautiful psychologist just like yourself, and she views ADHD like, I've always say this analogy, but I just love it so much I have to share it with you. Like Spider-Man, so at the start, Spider-Man gets the ability to do the webbing. And at the start, he's a bit chaotic with it. He keeps webbing himself and he's not sure about it. And he goes away to this industrial area and he practices and he learns how to make that gift work for him. Mm-hmm. And he learns how to use it. And that is how I view coaching. I very much view it like, and you know, and doing work on executive functions. We have this thing, absolutely, ADHD, you can web yourself all the time. you can absolutely web yourself. But when you learn skills about how to make it work for you, and you honor how your brain works, and the strategies work with your brain instead of against it, you can make it work for you. I mean, how many brilliant people are in the world with ADHD? Like, they're incredible, right? All my favorite people in the world have ADHD. So, but we just have to equip them with those executive function strategies, like around their challenges that they have uniquely, to be able to make it work for them.
Yeah. Yep. That is a great analogy. I can see why you share it a lot. That's cool. And you talked a little bit about, so then I think it kind of flows on to for people to understand why it's hard then if the parent that we're talking about has ADHD as well, because then, you know, you're trying to support a child with those challenges when it's hard for you as well. Do you have any advice? Well, and you mentioned the boom and the bust as well, which makes me think about really prioritizing that self-care, which sounds so stupid when we say it, but it's just wellness.
But I know what you mean.
Just being able to ensure your own needs are met so that you can be healthy and regulated yourself. Do you have advice for parents about how to, you know, what they need to do for themselves?
So I think what happens, and, you know, we know ADHD in essence is a dysregulated nervous system, right? So we end up living in fight or flight all the time. And so, you know, we know that what these families go through is a lot, and particularly the parents, they missed out on the skill building stuff a lot of the time because of the generational difference, like what we thought of ADHD. There was a stigma. Often people got diagnosed, didn't tell anyone. They, you know, they maybe missed out on the support. They didn't get psychologists that were there to support them. They didn't get occupational therapy. They didn't get coaches. They just kind of got told to shut up and deal with it. So we've got a whole generation of parents that are coming through that are perhaps reading a lot but don't have those practical tools and haven't been haven't got tools that work for them. And perhaps they even have that black or white thinking, I can't get tools that work for me because they tried a few things in a book and they're like, nah, this now doesn't work. So the biggest tip I have for parents that are going through with families that are full of ADHD is to really focus on themselves first. So I love to work with adults first before I look at the whole family. I don't know if you know about it, but like I'm sure you do, is that people with ADHD usually hate being told what to do. They hate it. So what we're doing for our kids is instead of telling our kids what they're going to do, we model it. Because kids learn by watching us. If we have a dysregulated parent, we're going to have a dysregulated child. I know that's really hard to hear because I don't want to think that like that either. But our kids learn by watching us. I've got to tell a personal story. My husband will kill me, but he's not here. So
that's right.
he used to, as a child, when he was dysregulated, he used to bite his hand. Right. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been taught any other way of doing it. I guess it is a strategy in a way. Now my sons bite their hand when they're dysregulated, right? Yep. So he has taught that strategy. It's not terrible. It's a strategy, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, that's this kind of thing that gets passed on. It's a learned behavior. So what we want to do is we want to focus in on that adult first, and then we can come and do family coaching and focus in on the kids and getting everything. But the first thing we do in coaching is really go for low-hanging fruit, right? So we go for what is going to give you a little bit more capacity, what is going to reduce conflict just a little bit. Like we will do what makes it easier and saves time first. Every day of the week, because I can't give people high level strategies that are in fight or flight because it's too much. I'm going to add to their overwhelm. So what I'll do first is I'll always go for what's easiest, quickest, funnest first. That works with the interest based brain with ADHD. Like we know, neurotypical brain is an importance based brain, and a neurodivergent brain is interest and novelty based, right? Yeah. So we go for those things first, give them some early wins, and then we start getting into the bigger, more hairier challenges that we need to tackle. So that's kind of how we approach it. It's very much about helping that adult first because we need them to be able to feel confident as well and not feel that instant overwhelm that comes along with raising kids with ADHD because, you know, I know I live it. I know how intense it can be. And definitely want people to have that confidence and have that inner strength as well because it's so much easier to advocate and ask for what you need and enjoy your time together once you know what's going on. Like, I wonder what's going on behind that behavior. Like, what's going on for them? Rather than just thinking, oh, they should be able to. Why can't they? You know, like all those kind of thoughts just don't help. They make things worse.
Yeah. So you focus on the bits that are going to make it, that shift that and make it easier to begin with, which is so great because then, and I agree, I do the same kind of thing with people, because then it's they've got a little bit more capacity, mm-hmm. which means the next things are easier and it kind of goes on from there. And I often say to parents too, you know, that sometimes they feel, oh, like when you said dysregulated child often means a dysregulated parent, and then we all get this parent guilt that comes up. And but if you flip it around, it means you've got the capacity to then teach your child mm-hmm. through modeling, much like your husband did. So it is actually a great thing to uncover that then if you switch things around, so will your kids. So
Yeah, that's right. And also our kids don't need perfect parents. Like I stuff up all the time. Like people are like, oh, you do this for a living. Like you must be like, so, like I stuff up all the time. Like I'm awful in the car. Like they are so loud and it's so sensorily overwhelming. And why hasn't someone invented like a thing that you can put between the children so they can't touch each other? What is up with that?
Yeah, I know.
So like, but you can stuff up, and you can, the best thing about people with ADHD is they usually like really, really compassionate and forgiving, and they are okay if you just turn around and go, I didn't handle that how I wanted to. I'm really sorry, guys. Like next time I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and I'm going to try for this. And, you know, like we don't have to be perfect. All our kids need us to be there and to have our back and have unconditional regard. And we can practice resets. We can go, let's reset. Let's try this again. Like, we don't need to be perfect. No one's perfect.
No. And I think that's great modeling for kids as well, to see someone recognize, own their mistake, and then correct it, move on. Yeah.
We can stuff up spectacularly in life and start again. It's that's the beauty of life.
Yeah, that's right.
And it often with ADHD comes perfectionism and comes that black or white approach. And we are modeling that you can do, there's another way. There's a little bit of gray in life, and that you don't have to be perfect. You can give it a go and it's okay. You can fail, and you can fail forward. You can just keep trying. Yeah.
Yep. So I just have a note here that I wanted to bring up, the one of your podcast episodes that I listened to, which before we kind of had our first conversation, was about the family meeting. I don't know if you remember that one. It was maybe late last year. But that's something that I've implemented at home with my family. And so I wanted to share with you that the impact that's had for us. It's been really interesting and helpful to do. And we have had family meetings before, but it was the ideas you had about how to adapt it for kids with short interest spans and attention spans. And I do have one of those. So it's been really helpful for me. And now we've got this family meeting that we have almost weekly. Most of us are sitting at the table. One of us is kind of walking around the edges of the table. But you had some advice about letting some of that stuff go and letting them kind of do what they need to do for that. And it's been really helpful. But I noticed that you have a family meeting agenda maybe available for people.
Yes. Yeah. I can put that in the show notes for you, or you can get it from the blog section of the website or on the podcast, ADHD Families Podcast. So basically what I do with the family meeting is I recognize that a lot of the time, you know, we're all so busy, and our kids value autonomy, and they also value being connected. And we kind of assume that they just know stuff that we know, but we're not actually setting it out for them. And also, my kids are very good at raising like gripes of what their brothers are doing wrong, and like, you didn't like that sort of stuff. They're very good at that. But what I actually wanted them to do is to look for the good and look for things to be grateful for. So our family mini actually starts with saying thank you to people for something for the week. And that has the ability of like opening the ADHD brain, getting it engaged. And if you look for the good, you'll find it. If you look for the negative, you'll find it, right? So I was trying to get them to say thank you to everyone for something. So they're on the lookout during the week for that thing. Plus, it has the added advantage of telling the kids what's coming up, which is executive function forward planning. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about what's happening, who's dropping so-and-so to soccer. We know the ADHD brain is often a very, very anxious brain. So we're talking about what's happening, what's happening here, who's going to be doing this drop-off, who's going to be doing this pickup. but also sharing the load so it doesn't just fall on me because I haven't communicated it. I need to be able to, this is my opportunity to go, okay, I'm busy on this day. Who's going to be doing this? Like, let's share the load a little bit. So it's been a game changer for my family. And at the start, I perhaps made it too long. So I've simplified it quite a bit. And we usually do it over something like tacos, which is interactive. So we have tongs. So like there's a little bit of engagement there as we're eating because people, you know, they like to serve themselves out little bits and pieces.
Yeah. Yep.
And so it's a fun, quick, and has big impact in helping us come together as a family and also share the load and be grateful for what we have, which has been a really great little addition to our family. So I'm glad it helped us as well.
Yeah, it did. It's funny, as soon as I started talking about it, I thought, how did I get here? This seems like a really random next thing to talk about. But I think it was the connection, because that's what we were talking about, and it has definitely helped with that. So having systems or ways that you can, or strategies, like you mentioned, for in the car when things aren't going well, to then come back to that connection. And but this is another kind of almost like a what's the word, like a regular event to that promotes connection, which is a really lovely idea.
Yeah. And I think that's what everyone wants, right? Like, human beings want to be seen and heard and be connected. And so it doesn't have to, the agenda doesn't have to look like our agenda. Agenda can be just one thing that family does. For a lot of families, if they don't feel up to doing a family meeting, even doing like sweet and sour at the end of the day can be a nice little check-in. So like they see something sweet that happened to them during the day and something sour that happened to them during the day. You know, like, it can be a nice one, or you can do rosebud thorn, and the bud is the anticipation piece, which the ADHD brain loves, like what's happening tomorrow, get them excited about tomorrow. And so, you know, those little check-ins are like a little mini version of that. I love to use traditions as anchors. Like, we know that the ADHD brain is a very busy brain. There's a lot swirling around in there. And those little traditions where we come together for those set things that are little moments of predictability are like little anchors in that storm where, you know, where our kids can feel really safe and they know that they know what's happening. They know the drill. They know the answers. They don't have to worry about looking different or looking like everyone's going to look at them. So, you know, they're nice little anchors for them.
Yeah, definitely. And what I noticed too is that sometimes when there's lots of those other things going on for families and it's difficult, sometimes a lot of our communication is about things not going well. And so in a family meeting agenda, it might be that everyone's got something to say about things that aren't going well. So making sure you build in those little moments of being able to connect positively is really important.
Definitely. I mean, we're all pretty good at voicing what's not going well.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, so, yeah, I do like to use those things for, you know, for those positive and creating that unconditional regard rather than, you know, voicing what's happening. If we do have issues as a family to solve, I refer back to, like, I do predictable problem worksheets with the kids, like these little predictable problem sessions, which is kind of like a, you know, getting them to really be problem solvers and thinking about what's going to work for them and the solutions. And it's really the outcome is not what's important, like whether the strategy works. It's actually getting them to think about what things they could use to solve their predictable problems. It's about getting them to start using that skill and build those skills around that, because sometimes they come up with some pretty interesting answers to some of the things, and a lot of the time it's better than what I could have come up with, so that's been interesting too.
That is really interesting. Is that a separate resource that you have for families?
I have a predictable problems worksheet and a little video on how to use it. It's something that you'll hear me talking about a lot on the podcast. So if what a predictable problem is a point of friction that comes up again and again. It might be like, you know, my little guy doesn't like putting the seatbelt on, and it happens every day, and my body tenses before we even get to the car because he doesn't want to wear a seatbelt, and I know whether he throws it or not that day that it's coming, right? So that's a predictable problem. So you don't choose it to address it when they're dysregulated, when they're dysregulated, it's just moved to safety and management. But when they are regulated and when you're having those nice calm moments, which is usually as I'm trying to put my children to bed, they're like, hey, how about we talk about the meaning of life now? because you look tired. And so usually that's when I'll come up with like, okay, I can notice that this is a bit of a struggle for you. Like, what can we do to make this easier for you? And we'll go through and we'll workshop it with that framework. And the reason that we come up with three solutions, not one, is because of the ADHD black or white thinking and that negativity bias. So we don't want them to go through one, and if that doesn't work, they go, oh, it's ruined.
Yeah.
Can't try that like ever again. What we wanted them to do is come up with three, and we're just experimenting. We're going to roll it out. There's no good or bad. We're just going to try it and see. We're just collecting data. And so we're just encouraging our kids to have buy-in on, we're all pretty good at picking out what the problems are, but what are possible solutions for us to try? What data can we collect to workshop this as a family? And our kids, you know, are super bright. You know they're great. Their brains are ideas factories. They know what the solutions are, and they're not going to do it because we tell them to. We need them to come up and be collaborative in our approach to coming up what those solutions are, and respect that they have some things that, you know, that they have some great ideas.
You
know, sometimes it's stuff that my brain just wouldn't come up with, and it works. It works.
Yeah, that's great, I think, because it is those predictable problems are often a great place to start, because they are those friction points that are happening, you know, routinely. So you know it's going to happen. But, yeah, having them work on it with you as a parent is a great way to get that buy-in. But also, like you mentioned, they do come up with good solutions because they understand the problem sometimes better than we do, because they're the ones experiencing it. Yeah.
And, you know, when you think about it, like in terms of energy, like our kids have meltdowns, right? And they're distressing, but that's not what sucks my life force, like in terms of parenting. Like what actually makes parenting hard is the day-to-day friction. Like that's the part that really grinds my gears. Like that's the part that burns me out. So addressing the predictable problems, those little points of friction first, and then all the decisions and like all of that stuff first, and giving us some capacity for that is actually like a really logical place to start,
because they're
more frequent and they're just little bits of tense interactions all the time that, you know, often have easy accommodations and easy solutions. You know, that we can just create something, whatever that looks like for that family. It doesn't have to be a linear solution. It can be like something that makes sense to that individual. You know, that creates more capacity and more joy for the family.
Yeah, that's right. And you're moving more into prevention, or, you know, being proactive about these challenges rather than putting out fires every single day, which is, really draining, like you mentioned. Well, that sounds, I mean, I'd love to read that one as well. I haven't seen that one yet.
I'll put that one in there.
Yeah, that would be amazing. So you've got, I feel like there's so much more we could talk about as well, because you've got a lot of insight into the challenges that ADHD can present for a family, but also as a parent as well. But I can feel and hear the positivity coming through as well about the potential, and that it's just about parents and even kids just learning the right skills and strategies for them at that time. And I think, all those families represented by those hearts up on the wall are so lucky to be able to experience all of your, you know, wisdom and help them through it all. Yeah.
Thank you. That's really, I mean, for us, it really is a passion project. You know, like we, you know, for me personally, I think that ADHD needs a whole lot of support, and it's something that we haven't traditionally done well. And so, you know, looking at my gorgeous little boys' faces and then all the beautiful families that I get to help. I mean, they're working so hard. Like life is hard, right? Like
Yeah.
Being a parent is hard. And then, yeah, throw ADHD in there and, you know,
yep.
And it's next level. So they need all the support and they need that community and they need that connection and having a safe place to ask, you know, ask questions and get support is important. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. And so just as a last question, I'm wondering where do you think, how would you describe what a functional family looks like? Because obviously no family's perfect either, and there will always be challenges. I mean, it's people living together. It's never going to run smoothly all the time. But how would you describe what a functional family that's happy can look like?
Oh, that's such a great question. I think for me, a functional family is one that feels safe and happy to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to have a perfectly clean house. We don't have to have all the things, like, you know, all the different components in line. I kind of see life a little bit like this, you know, the cockpit of a plane. There's lots of buttons and, you know, levers and knobs and things, and you get one and sorted and another one will go out, and then there's like new levels, new devils, ages, stages, all these things. So we're constantly adjusting and we're constantly pulling things back into alignment, you know, letting go of other things and trying to juggle all the things that life throws at us. But really all that we care about is that we have a safe, like happy as much as anyone can be happy. You know, we're not going to be happy all the time, but a family that feels good to be in. So when we get stuck in those fight or flight or just surviving because we are, you know, we have lots going on in our family, when we're just surviving, then we're not kind of living either. And, you know, I think the passion for me personally is about creating that capacity and time, because what usually happens when you create a bit of capacity and time is that we fill it with joy. We fill it with nice things.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like for the individual. It might be going for a walk by yourself. It might be, you know, being able to sit at the family table and have a dinner, you know, whatever that looks like for that family. It might be about connecting more in those family meetings. It might be even about just, you know, scheduling appointments and being able to make it there. You know, like, but whatever that looks like, it's about having it feel nice to be in.
Yeah,
that's my idea of a functional family.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way to put it, I think, because things will, like you mentioned with the cockpit example, that's a great one. Things will always, little alarms and things will go off. They always need safety checks, right? But a family that's happy to be in is a really great thing to imagine. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I really think the parents would get a lot out of what you've shared today. Even if it's just to start with that acknowledgement of, like, the stories, sorry, I'm all mumbling now because I'm, I don't know. I had this moment of like self-editing, don't say it. But I think because you came with, you know, such high recommendations for those people telling me that you were so lovely and have to talk to you doing such great work, I'm having this bit of a like starstruck moment. And then I didn't want to say it because it sounds lame, but, you know, I'm all about authenticity. So, but I think parents listening would get a lot, even if it's just hearing about how things can be difficult. That helps people feel seen and heard, but also knowing that there are things that they can do to help themselves and their families to, you know, work towards that functional family one step at a time is really great. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm really just so honored that you're coming inside my membership to talk to our beautiful family. So I'm very grateful for you coming in, because I'm sure that you will, you know, with your expertise, you know, provide so much value and support for the beautiful families. And I love that we share that beautiful goal to help, you know, help support families with ADHD, because I know how much it's needed.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm excited to do it as well, because I think the more, you know, really we share that goal, right, of having kids go through a better experience than a lot of their parents have have gone through. And by working together, we can kind of try and help as many kids as possible do the same thing.
Love that.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Parent Like a Psychologist. If you found it helpful, please share on Instagram so other parents can benefit too, and tag me at Leanne Tran Psychology so that I can say a big thank you. Head over to leannetran.com.au to join the village for bite-sized psychology tips straight to your inbox. I really hope this podcast has brought a new perspective and you a step closer towards a calm parent and a thriving child. Have a delightful day.